Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, and welcome back to the Grief Gang podcast with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. The message behind the Grief Gang is to normalise the topic of conversation that is grief. People living with grief can often feel ashamed, isolated, and alone. This podcast was created to break those taboos after I, myself, experienced all of those feelings after the loss of my mum in 2016. I decided enough was enough and we need to talk about this. You'll hear on this podcast an array of stories and experiences, some being my own and some being fantastic guest episodes and their incredible stories. You'll laugh, you'll cry, but I hope above all, I hope you'll learn. I hope you'll learn that you are not alone in your grief journey, that you have a voice and it should be heard, that you and your grief matter. So without further ado, I'll let you enjoy the episode. Happy listening. Hello, Grief Gang, and welcome back to another episode with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. We are now on the final episode of the season, which has been going since December. I can't actually believe I've held out for something this long, to be honest, consistently, and not being lazy and left it. But it's been a wonderful season, and we've heard from some amazing guests, and we've had a right laugh, had a right cry as well. And I'm about due a break. I'm very much ready for a break. I'm going to take a 2-month hiatus, go away to Turkey, and fully relax and come back for season 4 with a bang. But before I wrap up this season, I really wanted to have this conversation. And it's been a conversation I think has been long overdue, and probably for many reasons, as we were just discussing beforehand. But I think now the time is right, and we're both at a place where I think we're both comfortable and ready to have the conversation. I think not only with ourselves, but together too. So I would really like to introduce to you today, Grief Gang, my big brother, Kyle.
Hello.
How are you feeling?
Yeah, good.
This is your first podcast.
It is very much so. It's very weird.
You feel a bit awkward. So before we get into it and go back to that fateful day, just let's actually go back, if you want to tell them about yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go probably to one of the questions that I had at the end of this, but actually bring it to the top. What's probably one of your like earliest memories of mum before I arrived? So you had 7 years before my fantastic arrival.
Yeah.
And you wanted me to be a boy instead of a girl. And yeah, what was it for you? What was it like growing up with mum?
Obviously, yeah. So obviously she's always very bat crazy, obviously, from the get-go, but obviously very like caring, maternal, obviously worked with children a lot of the time when we were younger. Yeah, kind of like everyone kind of knew her in the community and things like that. She was kind of one of those people, really. So, yeah, like literally, like she was obviously crazy and she'd go mental at times and things like that. But yeah, I'd say kind, caring, always checking up on you, really. And checking up on everyone, really, on a lot of people, on all of her friends and her family and work colleagues and things like that, and all the different places that she worked. Like, she had friends, probably, she had friends from probably every single job she had at the funeral.
She did. She actually did, yeah.
Yeah, so it kind of showed the sort of person she was.
And kind of like, so do you have many memories of those, like, kind of 7 years before I came and kind of being an only child for so long? 7 years is quite a long time to be an only child.
Yeah, it is.
Did you feel like when I was born, was it, my mummy's being
I don't really, like, I've got loads of memories, but, like, I can't actually remember what it was like to be an only child, to be honest. Like, obviously...
We were really lonely, like, you had so many friends.
Because obviously we had, like, Melanie and that around a lot when...
Yeah,
when I was young. Little, and then obviously, like, we had, like, James, Catherine, and all that all around... like Kalash and all them people there, that they were just always around. So it didn't really feel like I was an only child, I wouldn't say. And then obviously all cousins, all dad's side, all the cousins, things like that. So,
but yeah, that's a little bit about you and kind of, yeah, growing up. So most people who are listening have probably gone back and heard my story. It's my first ever episode that I ever put out. And that was so many years ago now. But obviously there's so many different variations of that story. So many different people lost mum on that day and were there and were present. And I think for me, I've always probably been a bit too scared to ask a little bit because I there's just all these unanswered questions for me. So in as little or as much as you like, just, yeah, take us back to, I suppose, really, let's go further from, let's go even on the day of the 24th of Dad's birthday, bless him.
Yeah.
I still can't really believe to this day that she died the day after his birthday.
Oh, I know.
I think it's a real fuck you.
It is. It really was. She would have been happy about that bit, I think.
And we love you, Dad, but it really is a big fuck you. And that's kind of why I didn't really want him here now, because I knew that would come up. But I suppose, obviously, my version is on that 24th, I was trying to get hold of you and I couldn't. And it was eventually Helen who was able to get hold of you. And so my initial thought of when her colleague got through to me was I thought mum had committed a crime. When she said, call the police, it's about your mum. I went, and my initial thought was, because Dad was away in the Caribbean, I thought she smashed up his place. Because remember, her work was down the road from his place. My immediate thought was that she's done a crime, nothing ever to do with her health.
Yeah.
And so what was your initial thoughts when kind of, well, yeah, so Helen got through to you? Were you just like, what is going on?
Well, yeah, I can remember quite clearly, actually, because I was obviously working at Lease Plan then. And I worked on, like, obviously you've been working, you worked there before as well.
Shit,
so
hell.
Yeah, so...
And I don't care if you remind me for that, it's a shithole.
I worked on the third floor, so you can kind of see down into the lobby, can't you? So I got a call in the morning, about 10 o'clock, and it's from the receptionist, and she said, the police are downstairs for you. So instantly, I'm just like, what have I done?
Yeah.
I was like, what? I'm literally scrambling, thinking, I haven't actually done anything wrong for the police to turn up at my work, like that sort of level.
Yeah.
And obviously, I had my phone in my pocket the whole time, so I couldn't. I was on silent. I didn't see no calls, no nothing. Because obviously, like, you were trying to get hold of me, Helen was trying to get hold of me, just everyone was trying to get hold of me. And I peered down, and there's only one police officer there. So I was like, "Well, they're not here to arrest me, because they're going to need two.
They
of
would
them.
Bring arms in, yeah.
Yeah, they'd bring two. So I was like, "All right." And then as I've gone down, I've looked. I'd make myself sound like a criminal, but I'm not. I looked at my phone to see if anyone had messaged me saying,
"Boy, heads like, up,
heads
yeah.
up, this is happening," or blah blah blah. blah. And then obviously I see a million missed calls from you guys. So instantly I'm like, okay, what's happened? And then I get down and he was just like, "Look, your mum's been taken to hospital." He was like, "Do you want to drive or do you want to be blue lighted?" So I was just like, "Listen, blue light me.
Just take me, yeah.
Take me now." And obviously I called you guys and obviously you were like emotional. You were I think you were just on the way there. You were going to get there just before me. I think Helen was already on the way
Yeah, Helen made her way.
And yeah, and then I remember them saying, because I think obviously she's obviously arrived at hospital already, and then Nikki, obviously, who I knew from football, obviously she recognised mum.
Yeah.
And so she asked them, have you got hold of Kyle? And they were like, who's Kyle? And it was her son. Yeah. And like, we can't get hold of him. And she said, he works here. So that's why they come to my work.
I was wondering that. Okay, that makes sense.
That's how they come to my work.
Yeah.
So he said, she told him where I work.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. And then they come flying over and then took me over to the hospital. And then, yeah, after that, it's not a haze sort of thing, but like, for example, like
some things are.
I remember sitting in that room, that little tiny box room for ages, just trying to go and see her. And I remember him saying, like, police have to stay there because they don't know if it's crime scene, or not. And blah, blah, blah. And just a million things, obviously, because you can't see her straight away.
Yeah, we were a good couple of hours before we were actually allowed to see her. And by the time we did get to see her, that little box room had filled up, hadn't it? Then Chris coming down and then Talianne and everybody, and it soon started, like, word of mouth was getting around quite quickly.
Like, there was a lot of people in there. Like, it's funny, there like, was. COVID times, like, it would have been completely different that day. Obviously, then we got to see her, obviously. And then the police eventually went whilst we got to see her in A&E, I think.
Yeah.
Obviously, she was just all wired up at that point and whatnot.
I'd almost told myself, I think part of me was thinking, prepare yourself for the worst and just do, and to hear that you held on to hope.
Of that conversation, I just remember, obviously, Grandad was, he really pissed me off because he was just
he was being so negative.
He was so negative, which obviously we don't see it all the time, whatever. But I can understand kind of because all he's seen is loss. So he's just expecting, right, it's coming again.
Despair,
But obviously, that's not what I wanted to hear.
No, of course not. As, like, his two, as the two children.
He wasn't needed.
No.
He didn't do no good in that situation. But in that situation, obviously, they said that night, like, she's going to go into a coma for, like, 5 days and stuff like that. And in my head, what I was thinking, I knew the severity. I knew she'd been, like, unconscious for, like, 25 minutes, half hour, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I knew, like, we wasn't getting our mum back.
Yeah. I think that our conversation with the doctor the night before, because they weren't 100% giving us, like, real, like, almost real hope, but they were giving us little pockets. I remember them saying, you know, well, she's in the coma, and within, I remember he said, because this was the Friday, he said, and by Thursday next week, we'll try and take her off oxygen and see how she goes.
Yeah.
And I remember, even in my pessimistic mind, because I don't think I'd said out loud at this point to you or to anybody, like, my mum, I know my mum is going to die, and preparing myself for. I think I didn't want to let that off, because I think if I accepted it, then it was true. And it was when the doctor said, you know, yeah, okay, Thursday next week, we'll look to take her off oxygen. And I'm thinking, oh, hang on. Well, if the doctor thinks he can do that. And then it was when he said, but miracles can happen. And that's when probably the last slither of hope for me just died, because I thought doctors don't rely on miracles and they rely on numbers and stats. And even as much as Grandad was pissing me off with what he was saying and everyone in the room, and he was really giving them a hard time. And I look back and kind of, I think I gave the people there a hard time as well. I remember being quite barky with the staff and, everything like that. But even in the moment of finding the news, I think you just, as much as you may tell yourself, for me, I told myself, yeah, it's going to happen, nothing prepares you for. And so to go back to into that morning of, so obviously you and Helen had arrived before I did, and so how long were you there before they'd come out?
I got up early. I remember, obviously, because Grandad was hearing it.
Yeah.
And he would just had ants in his pants, like, the whole time. So, like, obviously, you don't really sleep that well. And again, so I was going there. I spoke to the doctors when I got there. They were like, yeah, obviously, Lorraine and Danielle had stayed there. And then I was like, what's happened? They were like, nothing. Spoke to them. They're like, yeah, this has happened. I think I can't remember what they said, but something had changed overnight. Not, like, worsened, but they were like, we had to do this.
Right.
Like something like maybe like dialysis or something like that. And then I was like, okay, fine. And then you're just waiting around. And obviously what's happened in between that that and that, and then they come and grab you, take you in the room. But yeah, as I said,
so
I
in that moment,
that's what I'm saying. In that moment,
there was no like rush of people, or you didn't have.
It wasn't
flicker
a rush. No,
of,
literally, no. Literally, everything was so calm. I was literally, I think we were the only people in
so
there.
So were you by a bedside? Are you in that,
no,
that family room?
I was in
yeah.
that room outside.
So they didn't allow you to see her that morning.
I didn't think I'd gone in yet. No. I don't think I could have gone in there yet. I'm pretty sure I didn't go in. I could have. I could be wrong. That bit's a bit hazy, but. Yeah, just got took into the room, and obviously they just said, look, your mum's had another heart attack. And then literally just another woman come through the door, and they were like, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
From that point there, it was real. There was no realisation about it. Yeah. It was that minute, leaving, I couldn't even get out the end of the ICU corridor.
No. We spent such an intense 24 hours in that ICU. It was almost like we'd set up camp there. And I kind of looked for that whole week, and I was like, okay, I'm going to be spending my whole... Well, however long, we didn't know however long we might have been spent in there, the ICU, and kind of... It felt safe in that ICU. And then to turn around, I remember me and you standing in that little... like bin area next to the corridor where the windows are. And me and you in that moment having to call everyone.
Yeah.
And I remember us both leaning up against the concrete wall and like going through the phone book. I think one of us might have even had her phone and like having, I remember even on her phone, do you remember when she was meant to do a babysitting job the night before? And the lady was messaging like, hi, where are you? And I think one of us having to take on messaging her, I'm so sorry, like, but mum died.
Yeah.
And, but that's for me really stuck in my brain of just us both. It's almost like dad was away. We didn't have dad put and was like fall upon either. So mum and dad weren't together, but we really, there really was kind of no one else who was going to muck in.
Yeah.
Not muck in, but like who had to do this, who had to call the relative people to let them know. And
it's weird, obviously. I remember like texting in the boys chat, just saying like, obviously AJ, I remember just saying like, he was away, he was on a stag. And I think I was like invited to that thing as well, and I'm thinking, like, imagine I went and I wasn't here and stuff like that. But and then obviously Mesh said like the mom's had a heart attack, like doesn't look good. And then next minute just saying, I remember just saying, boys, she's gone.
Yeah. For me, the finality of it all really hit me when we went to go and see her body with Auntie Danielle.
Mm.
And because I think up until that point, until I saw it, I didn't believe it. And it was when I saw her and I felt her and that I went, oh, okay, she's really not here.
Mm.
And I can imagine for how many, because it was kind of the same people, wasn't it, who came the night before and who were with while she was... like still warm and still like smelt like her. That's for me, it really struggled for me. She didn't smell like her anymore. And so many people walked, like when we think about how many people really flocked down to come and see her, because I think some people didn't realise the severity to a degree of what we were saying. When we said, she could go, you need to get down here.
Mm.
And those that did, and you're totally right, I remember seeing my old friend's dad walk in and him come back out. He's a big guy.
Mm.
And him come out and looking white as a ghost. And I thought, oh, fucking hell, that's knocked him. Like, I think of how many people flocked down to come and say goodbye to mum. It's a true testament to the woman that she was.
Yeah.
And...
I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah.
What was happening that day.
Yeah.
Because obviously there's plenty of other people in ICU as well, isn't it?
And like, it was a busy ward.
Yeah, so... like pretty much all the beds were taken up and things like that. But yeah.
And they were. And I feel like I know so many people don't have a positive experience with like healthcare services and like the people who looked after their loved one, and especially like recently. But I think we'd had quite a positive experience. I think any questions we wanted to ask were asked.
Mm.
I remember one nurse. I remember that little alleyway where I said we stood there by the bins. I remember we kind of made our smoking area, but we weren't really meant to. And I remember she came, I think we'd been told off a couple of times, and then she came out and I thought, oh, for fuck's sake, she's going to tell us off again. And she came out and lit up as well. Mm. It was just like, and I think she rubbed me on my back, and it was just this like little solidarity moment. And I remember actually going back to the ICU when Auntie Gracie went in and seeing her from afar. I remember thinking, she probably sees so many families like ours every day, every week. And it's mad to think how much they stay with us. And to a degree, like our loved one, our people's stories stay with them, but how much we remember them, but they may not remember us.
Yeah.
And they're a really integral part to our stories. I wanted to ask you about your friendships. It made me really proud of yourself and your friends as well. And when I look back at how much they rallied and still do rally for you.
Yeah.
But kind of, yeah, you said then about the chat and telling them there and kind of what was their responses and kind of, is there anything that really stuck out for you in what they did or might have said that really made you feel like really held and like, my boys have got me?
To be fair, I felt them boys were solid way before that. Like, obviously things can change anything, but I always thought like we can lean on each other. Like, don't get me wrong, boys are completely different. Like, we grill each other about anything.
Yeah.
You've got about 20 minutes once someone puts something serious in and then you're getting grilled about it. Obviously someone's mum's dying and the same, but but literally that's kind of how we do it. So the film is obviously I told them, and obviously then everyone come and like, obviously like they remember obviously like all like Chan's
that
mum,
night,
AJ's mum, Pav's mum, all the guys cooked to make bare food. They're like, obviously you've got lots to do, like we're bringing as much food as you want. Literally I had food galore.
We did not go hungry.
Fit it in. Like, it was everywhere. They'll come in, AJ's mum and dad come over, just sitting obviously like back here with his dad, was like, whatever you need. Chan's dad, it's exactly the same thing, like whatever you need, like we're always here for you, like you know that. Yeah, and then just the boys really, it's just like talk about when you need to talk about it, really. Like if not something that obviously like most blokes, not all blokes, but most blokes go and just want to deal with it on their own and whatnot. But when you want to have a 4 a.m. melt after you've come in from a night out or whatever, and you'll start chatting, and then obviously like Sook's obviously lost his dad when he was younger, and there's people that you can relate to. So yeah, it was a good thing, because more than not is that we would just crack jokes. Like the next day we'd be cracking joke about something else.
And you feel that's what you needed.
And I could just jump in, innit? Like it's just the same, innit? Like it's all good.
Bit of respite, innit? And kind of like you have the friends. Like I definitely have the friends, like if I want to get deep and meaningful with about it. And then having other friends where you just want to crack jokes. But like having that in all of your friends is really great to have And I think, yeah, that's kind of, I felt like what I need. I was very much, I'd say escape, but it was nice to just actually just go out with your mates and actually not think about being, I'm the person with the dead mum and I'm going through this.
No, I think boys are just different. I think we're naturally just a lot more, I don't know, awkward. If in a way that, if I was just going down a pub, we're just having a few drinks or I'm just meeting up with the boys or whatever we're doing, it wouldn't really be something, we just wouldn't bring it up.
I wanted to ask you kind of, we touched on earlier before we started about kind of like how you felt you just kept busy and whether that is a choice or, to me, I felt like you didn't actually have a choice in the matter. But would you disagree with that? Would you kind of say you purposely kept yourself busy? So obviously you had to take on the household. You semi became a caregiver for me.
Obviously, yeah. So from that moment, instantly,
it was like, deaf admin.
Yeah, literally everything had to be sorted straight away. So obviously, I don't know nothing about nothing. I don't know nothing about arranging a funeral. I don't know nothing about, I don't really know nothing about mum's finances. In a way, it gave me a lot of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I was just kind of, always been like ambitious and I know what I wanted to do. And I was going to head there, but I was coasting. Obviously, at first, I didn't really want to impact you at all. I just wanted you to have, obviously, I wanted you to have the same life. Obviously, it's not going to be the same life, but I wanted it to be close.
To some degree,
To what it was before. So that's why I wanted to try and keep everything the same as much as possible, really. But yeah, there was a lot, like, that's what I'm saying. In the first few weeks, like even up to the funeral, like, everyone's around you and everyone's there. Yeah. It's when it goes all
quiet. Our house was never quiet.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. When it goes quiet and now it's all done.
Yeah.
And it's just yourself there now.
I think that was for us when, like, yeah, like for that first, yeah, it was supposed to be, we had to wait a good couple of, nearly a month after for the funeral. And then it was her birthday a month. So kind of for that first 2 months, we had something almost to say loosely look forward to. And have, yeah, the reason to flock everybody together. And I feel like it was, yeah, like the September where we went, oh, well, there's nothing else. Or it was, we were waiting then for Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we had like 4 months in between that. So it was like, right, okay, well, the to-do list is all done. You've let everybody know that needs to know financially, whatever it may be. We've done the funeral. We've done all this. And then it was like, and now it's just time to sit with our feelings.
Mm.
And that's when, yeah, I think things really started. I think, yeah, there's a question here from somebody later on, but I feel like, yeah, because you'd protected me from so much of not wanting me to get involved in any of the stuff, not wanting me, but to protect me from it. Because, yeah, like when I hear other people's experience of NAB, how much admin there is, yeah, 19, I would have been like, what the fuck is this? I don't know, am I making the right choices? Should we be doing that? I don't know. And so I feel like it was, yeah, when the dust settled was kind of when me and you may have both realised, I think, well, I clocked, he likes to do it differently.
Mm.
And your way was keeping busy, because then it was do the house, renovate that, everything like that. And at first I was like, okay, that's fine if that's how he wants to do it. And then, but then it kind of left me of like, oh, I've got all this time to stew. Mm. And it almost, I remember the times I used to feel like, oh, I didn't want to come to you and speak to you about it because you just had so much going on.
Yeah.
And then we all started rucking heads, and there was a lot for all of us. And when we're living together, we all, you know, Helen's life uprooted, changed. Like when I look back now and I think, yeah, obviously Helen was my age, and I'm thinking, I would, if this was vice versa and Joe's mum had died, and this was, I'm thinking, fucking hell, yeah, it's a lot to take on. It's a lot to take on. And then not only to discover that less than a year later, you're both going to become parents.
Mm.
And I think, yeah, that's what I really want to kind of, yeah, you found out a week before mum's first year anniversary, after we all together as a family have been through so much shit together, and me moving in, me moving out, and just pure chaos. And you know, we spit venom at each other. We spit venom at each other, and we both hold our hands up, but I don't hold no resentment for it, because I think we were just really fucking heartbroken.
Yeah, we were.
And I just think we didn't really know how to talk to each other and said, really say, do you know what, I'm just really sad mum's died.
It's how we do it, isn't it? It's how we did it when mum was here, it's how we do it.
When
she's not here, but I didn't have any doubt, like even Helen will say it, like, I said the whole time, right? I said, obviously, you're dealing with it in a different way, but I never doubted that you would come to your senses. Personally, I said, I don't know how long it'll take. And obviously, I wasn't going to take any of your nonsense in the meantime. And obviously, same with you, you were going to say whatever to me. But I did know that it wasn't, for ages, I didn't know when it was going to get better. And if it was going to get better.
Yeah.
But I did trust that it was
trust the process, yeah. And I think it was, yeah.
I have a list of things, like I've got a list of things I write down years ago. Just random things. Just write a list of what you want to do, what you want to do in your life. Anything, it could be anything. Literally, you want to read this book, you want to go on this holiday, you want to go this. I think one of the points was make things right with Amber. I think that was one of the points. So I didn't have any doubt it was going to happen. I just didn't want it, obviously, to be too long. Cause obviously,
yeah. And it was, and it was like, it was a long time. And we went, all together nearly nine months, but majority of that year without speaking. And it was intense. We'd all had so much change, and you'd both become parents, and like this family home that I'd known had changed completely, but I knew everything was for the better. And this new baby had come, and he'd absolutely changed my life, and like brought me, he makes me cry because he brought me so much happiness.
I think at that point, because obviously I was stuck in the middle of everything. I've got you going off on one side. I've got Dad in my ear on the other side. I've got Helen in my ear.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to juggle all these things. And it was just that at that point where she got pregnant, Helen was just like, all right, I'm just going to trust you to do whatever you wanted to do. Mm. I'm just going to let you do it. Which obviously was to do the house and do everything here. And yeah, everything kind of clicked into place once we knew about Leo.
Yeah.
And obviously then he arrived, and obviously it's just a game changer, isn't it, really?
It was, yeah. It was an absolute game. And it was like, the way I describe it, it's kind of like he was like this plaster, I think, like, not like a nice way to put it. He was this absolute blessing, and then he was almost like this plaster. But because when he'd arrived, it was kind of like, we'd found out we were pregnant and his baby's coming, and it was like this joyous time. We were so elated, but we were like, we still haven't dealt with all this shit that's happened before. Yeah. When we found out Helen was pregnant, we were all still in the ruck still. Yeah. So we're like, you know what? Fuck what things just happened for the past year. This baby's coming. What a great time. And it was. I don't think there was nothing fake about that. We genuinely were all elated. And then he's arrived and we're all here together. And that first year of his life, I will cherish it forever because, well, one, it's given me this huge insight to parenthood. Mm-hmm. I think everyone says, oh, well, you lived your life. I said, yeah, and I know semi what it's like to be a parent. But I felt it was like I had my own shit I needed to deal with. And you two are becoming a family, and we're all family, obviously, but I thought, it almost felt like I was like, just not like outgrowing, but I was like, I felt like I was going to say something that I regretted or do something that I regretted, and just, because I hadn't been dealing with what I needed to deal with inside with Mum. And it's very dark thoughts, and I just really wasn't happy with myself. And then when it all erupted, the eruption at you guys was just all this pent up shit that I had with myself and really stuff that I probably should have conveyed months beforehand. Just sat down and gone, I'm not happy and I need to go and sort my own shit out. And we did, and we parted ways for 9 months, and it was awful, and it was, yeah, the most awful time of my life. And then everything fell apart, I feel like, in order to come back together again.
Yeah.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
As much as I don't wish that was the way things went down, by the time I didn't know the language or how to actually really express myself, and because it was too hard, and I didn't really know what to say other than to just be angry. Anger was all I feel like I knew for a very long time. And until I actually realised a lot of my anger was just a whole lot of pent-up grief that I had and wasn't able to express, could I actually finally come and sit down with you two on those separate occasions and go, let's talk now. I hold my hands up. I fucked up. I was a total dick. Let's repair this relationship. And I think even people now speak to friends, whatever, they think, you guys have really turned a corner.
Mm.
And I do think, and where we had to fall apart to come back together. And for some families, they fall apart and they never come back together again. And they do just part their ways.
Yeah. But
I think both, even me deep down, I kind of always knew I would never, I couldn't have never not seen my life at that point, like for the rest of my life, but the three of you in it. So I thought, I knew something had to give. Things were still really intense then. Having Leo change your grief at all, how you looked at your grief at all. And actually, maybe even more like how you looked at even like mum. Like, I feel like I imagine when I have children, I might look, not look at mum differently, but look at almost like her style of parenting. Like, did you look at like when, I don't know, the way you might parent Leo, do you recognise like ways in how mum would parent us?
Yeah, I think it's pretty similar. You're never really going to go far off what you had unless you've had a bad experience. Unless it's been a bad experience, and
you want to stay away.
You want to stay away from that. But yeah, look, they've raised good children, I think. Really, so mum and dad did. So yeah, I think it's very similar. I'd say like obviously when you have children, like obviously at first you're just a bit like, well, she's not going to know. She didn't get to.
Mm.
It's more. She's missed out, really.
Yeah.
But also, it's one of those things, isn't it? Like, you obviously want to see your... It's nice to see your parents hold your child and stuff like that, isn't it? Like, that is obviously something that you'd really want, and you're never going to get that, which isn't nice. But then, I don't know, man. You just... One thing, for sure, is... I understand a lot of the things she'd done... Where I'd were out with her and argue with her over certain things.
Mm.
And I understood why she done it since I've had children.
Mm.
So, like, for example, like, we used to row over the house, obviously. Like, she was working her ass off.
Yeah.
Obviously, when dad had gone and just doing bits and bobs or whatever.
Mm.
Obviously doing the charity store, and then she'd do like babysitting sometimes, and then she'd do that. I was just like, why, like, you doing all this? Like, I was always just like, just sell. Like, it's too much.
Yeah.
Like, and she'd be like, no. And then I'm thinking, like, look what I've done with this.
No.
Look what I've done with this.
Yeah.
Like, look what I've done with this house that she effectively left for us. Like, that is a parting gift.
It's a legacy.
And then with that, you're going to have money to go and do yours. And it set us up both. And she could have easily, but then, like, for some reason, she said, no, I don't want to.
I know. And it was almost like her stubbornness, it would drive us up the wall sometime, wouldn't it? But then you look and you think, because, yeah, she didn't, it's not money's everything, not at all. And, like, what is left behind. But you look and you think, she's left this asset. And more so for me when I think about it, as much as it was hard for me to see the house change, and it was, I'll never lie about that, but I look and I think, how special is it that Leah and Nala get to grow up in the house that we grew up in? As much as it's nothing like it, but that's so special to say that this address has been in our lives since the early 90s and will go on to like however long.
Yeah.
And who knows, might give it to Leo or Nala, and it will stay like a family heirloom.
Yeah.
And although we're in Slough, it's still an heirloom. But it's special, and to know that in some of the brick and mortar of this, like, she has touched. She has roamed these halls, and it's special things like that.
Yeah. So there's a lot more clarity, and I understand kind of what she's done, a lot of the things that she's done, and yeah, you just do it because now that's what you do for your children and things like that. A lot of clarity.
Yeah.
For sure.
And how do you talk to the kids about mum? Like, I've obviously always caught wind of kind of conversations. I think especially with Leo. I think I started noticing quite early in Leo, like how switched on he is about mum. And it always takes me back, like, when I was saying Nanny Sue and even Nala, and it's, it breaks your heart all at the same time, as much as it does warm it, because you think, you know who this woman is, but yet you don't.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to hear, like, How do you talk with the kids? Well, more so Leo about it, and Isla's still so little. Did you ever have like a conversation one day where you just like, because does like, he ask like, oh, Helen's mummy is nanny.
Yeah, so
where's your mummy? Kind
yeah,
of thing.
Like he never asked a question like that. Like I remember I said to him, that's my mummy. He's like, no, mummy's your mummy. I'm like, no, mummy's not my mummy. But yeah, he's just obviously like from dead. Obviously, we've got photos of, around of her and things like that. So yeah, we just always mention her, keeping it. Obviously, we go to Great Yarmouth, we go to the grave and things like that. Mm. So yeah, they kind of. I don't know how much he understands, really. I think he doesn't. Leo definitely, I think, understands now. Mm. Obviously, because he wasn't there when it happened. He doesn't know, like, didn't know it like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of just like those photos and Nanny Sue. I don't know if he actually quite understands that's actually a person.
Yeah.
He won't really understand that probably till they're older.
No. And do you feel like you'll be, like, ready for that conversation of kind of. Obviously, I personally feel like children are a lot more resilient and like robust than we think. And kind of if we were to sit down with them both and say like, Nanny died, and even saying the D where people really fret from it and go, oh, don't speak about death. And I actually remember one of my memories of mum is I remember saying, I think I remember coming from school one day and saying to her like, oh, mummy, don't die. Mm. And her going, don't say that word. Like it was like a filthy word.
Yeah.
And almost like she was almost like scared of the word. And so, and I know, I still know like many parents like that now, they're like, oh no, we don't talk about like death or dying or anything. And I don't know, to go into the morbidness of it, but the natural way of life, like when like Maureen died, you know, he said, Arnie Moe's gone.
No, and I did mention it to him. I just obviously said like, obviously when we were going up, well, we went for the funeral and then I, just, I did tell him like, that Arnie Maureen was really poorly.
Yeah.
Obviously he see her poorly, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
I was like, Arnie Maureen's obviously not here no more. Blah, blah, blah. So when we were going up, he was just like, Arnie, it's only Uncle John now, isn't it? It's Arnie Maureen.
Yeah.
So he does like understand.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, yeah, I'd be fine for the conversation.
Yeah.
When it comes down to it.
Mm.
When it comes.
Yeah. I think obviously as well, little Nala, she's got, and I think for her, you know, she's carrying his mum's name and,
it's just a shame for both of them really. Cause look, and they like, obviously like Helen's mum and dad are great, like, but like, my mum's completely different as well, that's what I'm saying. So it'd be nice, like, it's just nice for them to like, it's one of those things like that we've barely had any grandparents in our life. Obviously we've had grandparents, but some of them were in the Caribbean, so we never really got to see them that much.
Dead or not present.
Obviously mum passed away when giving birth to her and
it's kind of like we had different, for us.
Yeah, like, it'd be nice for them to have, obviously, like the full set.
Yeah.
And obviously it's them that are missing out, isn't it? Obviously Leonardo missing out and mom missing out.
And I think because we knew that, you know, we saw her, she worked with children for her life. Mm. She adored children, and any new baby that came into any one family, she would absolutely dote on. And it's just like a bit of an injustice, isn't it? Of like, she would have been such a wonderful grandmother. Mm. These kids wouldn't have wanted for nothing. Been spoiled. Like, we think dad spoils them. Mum would have been times 10. And it is, but no, I think they'll both be wonderful, and it will be, there'll be no type of way of talking about mum at the dinner table or anything. Cause I think, starting it from young and even, you know, simple as Nanny in the Sky, like it's having that understanding of, well, the natural cycle of life, and how it is. But yeah, so my last question before I'll go into a few of the grief gang questions. What's something that mum taught you that you carry or hold to this day, like a moral or just something she instilled in you that you feel you carry still?
I don't know how to really say it. It's like work ethic, but not work ethic sort of thing. It's just like, simple, like even mum and dad, I look at both of them and without thinking about it, the way I am, like, it doesn't matter what happened to me the day before, I'm getting up and I'm going the next day.
Mm.
Like, don't matter how tired I am, how hungover I am, whatever it is, I'll get up and I'll just do it.
Mm.
Like, I'm not fussed about doing it. And I think just years and years of watching them both do that, just get up, you got to go work, or in the evening, I don't matter how tired you are, you got to go work, you got to go and do what you need to go and do.
Mm.
Literally, I just remember them They both work, both work hard.
They do.
They
yeah,
both really work hard. Yeah. Like even looking at them both, like
yeah.
When you really think about it and you look back at it, you think like
mum worked two jobs.
They were working really hard. Both yeah. of them. I remember like when mum. I don't think you were born at this, but just put a memory from before you were born. And me and Dad used to go and sit right on the side of Asda.
I remember a little bit of that.
Mum used to come out the back and we used to sit there waiting for her and collecting at about like 10 o'clock at night.
I remember that sometimes. I'd sit on Dad's lap and he'd do the pedals and I'd do the steering wheel. She'd normally be working sometimes, like two jobs at a time. Dad would always be changing, wouldn't it, to kind of be work at night to do it. Yeah, they definitely, I think, instilled a good hard work ethic. I mean, I'm definitely more tendency to call in sick than you probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, they definitely taught a hard graft. As I said earlier, I've got a few questions from the Grief Gang community. So I put a call out and just said, I'm doing an episode with my brother. He's the oldest sibling. If you're like of a sibling and you've lost a parent, or, you know, is there something you'd like to ask your sibling in your grief, or just something called my brother, be about him, my relationship, our mum. And these are a few of the ones I got back. We've got quite a few. So yeah, we'll whiz through them and see. So the first one I got was, what is one thing you would like Amber to know? Is there anything left unsaid? When I saw that, I went,
no, honestly, there actually isn't. I said everything. Mean or whatever you needed to know at the time. Obviously you need a woman in your life, isn't it, really? You need someone to fall back on,
the guidance, yeah,
and guidance, and me and Dad can't give you that guidance.
So
I always knew it was going to happen. We said what we needed to say.
Nothing left unsaid. No, I can't think of anything, but I don't think I've said no. Next question. Being the oldest, did you feel a sense of needing to protect your sister, i.e. get everything sorted?
Mate, I took that role on. I just took it on anyway. Like, I didn't even think to ask, really.
Yeah.
It didn't even go through my head, because I know at 19 I wouldn't want to be doing that.
Yeah,
that's what, how I thought about it. If I thought about how I was when I was 19 and I was going out every weekend, I was I had a decent job, I was spending all my money every weekend. That's what you do, isn't it? You spunk all your money, you go out, you're kind of finding your feet, just got wheels and drive anywhere.
Yeah, no, it was.
You can start doing what you want to do. So I just thought, I don't want that to change because her mum's passed away now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was kind of a natural reaction.
No, definitely. What do you do when you have the urge to call your mum and just, or generally talk to her? I'd love to ask my older siblings. I don't really get that much anymore. Like, I've never, I know some people, they'll get the urge, like, not that they don't forget, but sometimes, you know, just sometimes like you're like almost muscle memory forgets. And I know some people, like, they'll get in their car and it'll be like the routine, they would call their mum or person in the car and they'll just go, and then I'll go, oh. Like, I feel more like that with Mo.
Yeah.
If I'm in the car, like if I'm sometimes driving from mine to Joe's, I'll go, I'll call Mo.
Yeah.
And I'll call, and then I'll go, oh, fuck no.
Yeah. Like, obviously, like, I'd say obviously more, because obviously then it was kind of weird, because obviously like mum always used to talk to her more, innit? And then we would jump in on the call, say hello for her and have a little chat with her. I felt like, I've kind of replaced mum in that kind of bit there, because I was the one calling Mo now.
Yeah.
Or she'd call me.
Yeah.
And you just have a catch up or whatever. And obviously same with John now and things like that. But yeah, again, as I said, like, if mum was calling me, it probably wasn't good. So
as we were, we weren't ever really like a.
It wasn't like
we
all lived
together.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So it was more to know something. So I never really had that. I do remember.
Is there a moment where you think, oh, when do you feel the most? Oh, I wish I could ask her.
I do remember, like, I don't know if Helen might still have messages from mum still on her phone, but I accidentally deleted them off mine. I accidentally deleted them, and I was just like, I don't really hold on to it that much.
Was your relationship tense after, i.e. blaming each other? Who could have done more? How to overcome that? I mean, I think it was tense after. Yeah.
It was tense. Well, obviously, we both had things to say and whatnot. Yeah, I think it's always, someone's always going to get a backlash of some sort.
Mm.
It might be someone you know, it might be someone you don't know. I think most people do have a backlash at some point.
Yeah. I think so, yeah, for most people, I'm still yet to kind of discover, I know some we'll speak from a sibling perspective, but most siblings will have a semi-ruck because everyone, and one of the most common questions I get, like when it comes to parental loss and with siblings, it will always say, but my ex-siblings does it so differently from me. And I think the expectation, I think what my expectation was of you was, oh, well, we both lost mum. We're obviously going to do it the same, but then not factoring in that, well, one, the actual responsibilities now have changed. Therefore, that's going to like affect how you process it. And also, although she was our mum, she was like two different people to us. You were her eldest, I was her youngest, and then you had like 7 years before me. And so she didn't treat us any different and love us any differently, but we both held different memories with her. And so kind of every relationship is unique. And so how there's every loss is going to be unique as well, regardless if they are your biological mother or not. So I think that was for me to actually kind of more understand you from like a very base level, to actually tell myself like, and we're going to do it differently, and that's fine. And it's not, it doesn't mean that one misses her more than the other if one chooses to express it more. Like, I do a podcast on it, but it doesn't mean I miss mum just because I talk about her more openly, especially, or any less. It doesn't, or I'm like distanced from it at all. So I think for me, that was my biggest learning curve of how siblings do grieve, for sure. Yeah, then this one. Being the older sibling, do you ever feel guilty that you got longer with your mum?
That I got what?
That you got longer with your mum.
Do I feel guilty?
Do you feel guilty you got 7 years longer than me?
Not at all. Why would I feel guilty?
Because you got 7 years longer of mum than me.
I don't know. It's odd because obviously those 7 years, obviously, like you hear, obviously, when someone passes, you start hearing. Obviously, we learned a lot about mum that we never knew when she passed. So those 7 years were tough for her. Obviously, isn't it? She obviously moved to a town that she didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have any friends or family down here.
Yeah.
Obviously, she lives in Tower House, in the block of flats, and then moved obviously to Sibley Lane like a few years later. Like,
yeah.
Can't have been easy.
No.
At all for her. So there's probably a lot of her finding her feet at that time as well, obviously. And
but she was only, had you when she was 20, 25, 26, yeah, 25, 26, yeah.
Yeah. So obviously she's finding her feet, obviously learning how to be a mother on her own, really.
Yeah, dad's working.
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. I do have memories, but a lot of them, obviously, I do remember briefly Tower House. I do obviously remember like Sue and Tracy and Melanie, and bits and bobs like that. But yeah, like, I can't even remember mum pregnant with you.
Oh.
I actually can't. Thinking about it, I actually can't. Like, wow,
very memorable, aren't they? Yeah. Jeez, so nothing really memorable in those 7 years that you had with mum on your own.
That's what I'm like. It's hard. It's weird. Obviously, because like, then obviously the majority of life, obviously you've been here.
Well, I suppose like really kind of like, it, obviously you had one-on-one time with mum and dad, but like you said earlier, there were so many of you kids. Like you, you always had, when you had a thingy next door. You were around so many kind of children. Yeah. You would have never really had that kind of your only child syndrome. I mean, as you said as well, mum and dad were always working. It wasn't like mum was a stay-at-home mum. She was out working all the time as well. Okay, so no guilt there. what would you want to say to your sister now that you couldn't have back then?
I don't know. It's hard.
I feel like you did. I feel like you were very open with everything, and kind of you never, like, as much as sometimes it would hurt, you never held back.
One thing I remember
you always said to me, and you went, I'm the only one in your life who's going to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, no, you're chatting shit. And you were like, I'm the only one who's going to tell you the truth, because, like, I don't give a fuck what like your response is, because I'm the only one who's going to tell you straight.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sell you a dream.
No, because I'm in the same position as you.
Yeah.
And I was saying to you before, obviously, dad doesn't ever want to hurt your feelings.
Yeah.
Because you're his daughter and he wants to look after you and things like that. So if that means not telling it to you how it is, then that's what he'll do. Because he doesn't want to upset you. That's absolutely fine. I get it. Now that I've got a daughter as well, I'd probably be the same way. But yeah, I will.
I would say straight.
Yeah, because you need to hear it. Everyone needs to hear it. I need to hear it from someone. Like, Helen will check me if I'm doing something stupid.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to be checked by somebody.
Yeah.
Same with sometimes your friends, and that they don't really want to tell it to you.
That's what I'm saying,
obviously, good friends will, but sometimes it's a hard subject to touch on.
Well, even in the circumstances, like I imagine, like when I was, wild out of all my friends, kind of, there were times I think people were trying to tell me, like, maybe take five before you send that message or sleep on it and something. And some friends gave me grace and realised, Amber, you're not the Amber that we know.
Yeah.
And gave me the grace, and I thanked them for that. But other friends were like, oh, I'm tapping out. Like, I did not sign up for this shit. And rightly so, because all I did was just spew venom at people. But no one really wanted to check me, because it was either, well, they didn't want to be in the firing line either.
Yeah, of course.
And not that I was a bully to be afraid of, but thought, oh, I don't want a piece of that either. Like, fuck that. Mm. What was the hardest part about the loss for you personally?
The hardest, as I said earlier, I think the hardest part of the whole thing was just leaving her there.
Mm.
Just the whole thing. I can remember that part, like, clearly. That was the hardest part. Because at that point there as well, it was just like, right, she's gone.
Mm.
Like, that was it. I'm leaving the hospital now. Then obviously all the in between, like even like when we went to like the funeral home afterwards, and dad got back the next day, and then he wanted to go and see her and whatnot. I was like, that's not my mum.
Yeah.
Like, leaving that hospital was me leaving her. Like, I don't think the funeral, obviously it took ages, it took 3 weeks or whatnot, and obviously you had to go to Norfolk and all that planning going on, but like, that wasn't closure. That moment walking out there, That was it for me.
The closure.
Obviously, the funeral, that is emotional and whatnot.
Like you'd closed the book when we left the hospital?
I feel that was when I obviously really took it in, like, she's gone.
Mm.
Obviously, we went to church the next day.
Church, I don't know why. Was hard.
Yeah, church. That was hard.
I still actually find it now. I've actually been ready to go back into church, because all I think of is us.
But
there.
It did make me feel better.
Me too.
I felt better leaving there.
Mm.
For sure.
Did you struggle? This question, but I never really actually. I still feel part of me is a tangent. We were raised in the church, but not like religiously. Like, we'd go every Sunday and stuff, but I will never forget one of the sisters coming to us that day after and saying, he's a good God. Do you remember that? I can't remember what sister it was, and I remember looking at her and thinking in my head, but if he's such a good God, why did he take our mum? And from that day, I really struggled with kind of anything that I had believed in up until that point of, but if he's a good God, then why did he take our mum? And I suppose that's the question probably that everybody who follows a faith may question their faith. Mm. And I still feel like now I'm on a journey with it, to be honest. Like, I dip in and out of it, but I do feel comfortable when we go back to church. I think because that's another place that holds memories for us too.
Yeah.
Mum was there. There was, you know, Sister Sue. There was refer to her. But yeah, I felt a lot of comfort in that day, the day after we went. It almost felt like it was the right thing to do, wasn't
it? Yeah, I felt something like come off my shoulders a little bit.
Yeah.
At that point there. But I think I did go through the same thing as you did with faith and things like that. For a while, I was just like, nah.
Mm.
Like, why? Why would that happen?
Mm.
But then I think I also went the other way as well.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I'm more, but I do believe.
Yeah.
And
Do you find comfort? I find comfort in it now still.
Yeah, like
I find comfort in music.
And I just feel like it's just weird that you feel better.
Yeah.
Leaving there.
Mm.
Obviously, Pastor come to the hospital the day before as well.
And that was just like an innate, we just did, we went call Pastor, didn't we?
Yeah, and obviously he come down and whatever, said a prayer and whatnot. But yeah, it did make me feel better. Mm. And on the list after that, I did read the Bible.
Have you?
I've done a few chapters, that's about it. But yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, really.
Mm.
It is tough. That's the first thing you're always going to question and things like that. But yeah, it's just one of those things. And you see it now. You hear about it way more now. When you've lost someone, especially to whatever you've lost them to, your mind's automatically tweaked to it. It happens all the time. You meet so many different people. They're like, oh, bloody hell, you've lost someone. You've lost someone. You've lost someone.
Yeah.
And you realise it's everyone.
Waits for no one. It's just, I think, in a way, I think, you know, we look at both like our friendship circles at the time. Like, we might have known like a friend of a friend who had had it, like really little when they were young. No, that makes it any different. But we were kind of like on our own for a little bit, or for a while, kind of almost like we had to kind of, not like make the baseboard, but like, wander it alone for a while, like being the only person in our peer groups, workplaces, being like of our ages, navigating this loss. And then as years go by, like some of your friends have lost parents, and I look at mine, I think, and I mean, so many people now, I think, fuck me, yeah, like death waits for no man or woman. It really does not care for you leaving your little children behind. It does not wait for nothing.
It does scare you.
It does scare you. And I think it, and like imagine for you, you know, kind of having your two children now, of like, almost imagine like when I, sometimes when I think about mum, we always think kind of like ourselves in it. We think of us as like the main, we're always the main star in our own stories. And then I actually think about, it was when we went to that medium and I remember the lady said to me, she went, and your mum, she misses you too as well.
Mm.
And it absolutely floored me. And she could have just said it off cuff, whatever. Mm. But it made me think, oh my God, yeah, of course. She wouldn't, if she was in any kind of sane mind, as she was, as they said, talk to her, she can hear you. You can imagine her going, I don't want to go. I don't want to die. Yeah. Like, save me, please. Because, and you sit there now as a parent and go, I don't want to leave my children. Why would I want to do that?
Like, it does scare you.
Make sure
you
look after your health.
I checked the other day just out of random, because I don't go to doctors, I don't do nothing. Not that I live a particularly bad lifestyle. No. But it does make you think. I was thinking this the other day. I was just like, if I went today, although Leo and Nala really know me, when they go older, they barely have any memories of me.
Mm.
They wouldn't be able to tell you much.
Yeah.
Even though...
Although we know, we've done so much.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, their memories and how would they struggle. And,
Like, Nala might not even know who I was.
Yeah, she's so small.
She's so young.
Yeah.
Whereas Leah would have some memories, but it wouldn't be that much.
Yeah.
It's scary, isn't it?
No, it does, isn't it? It's important to document and to share things and kind of... I feel like Mum... I feel like Mum was quite a good documenter.
Yeah.
We have got a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, I don't look and I think, oh, she's left nothing but like got like a handful of, I mean, we've got a whole trunk, haven't we, of all stuff from when she was a baby for her whole life. So it's so important to document lives and, yeah, she's done a great job of that. But that's all my questions out. I feel great. How do you feel?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's been a long time coming.
Yeah, no, I'm really happy about this conversation. Really and truly. Well, Grief Gang, thank you for listening. This is the end of season three. It's been a great season, and I will see you in the beginning of September. Big love. Bye. Well, that's it for this week's episode. I hope you all enjoyed it and it set your week off to a great start. Whether you've laughed a little, cried a little, I mean, I think crying is good for the soul, or you've resonated with something that was said, thank you for listening and spending time out of your day to do so. If you like what you hear, please do rate, review, and subscribe. In doing so, you're ensuring that lots more people get to find the Grief Gang podcast and hopefully help them too. If you're not already, check out the Grief Gang on social media platforms such as Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. I'm most active on the Instagram page where I love, love, love to connect with you all. For now, take care and big, big love.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.